My name is Megan Hunter, and my new book is Days of Light.
In Megan Hunter's historical novel, Days of Light, we meet Ivy and follow her throughout six separate days of her life, spanning between her young adulthood and her 80s. Loosely based on the Bloomsbury Group, Hunter imagines for Ivy a life of tragedy, love, and everything in between. I recently spoke with Megan Hunter about her new novel. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Megan Hunter. Could you describe Days of Light for our listeners?
Sure. So Days of Light is a historical novel. It begins on Easter Sunday, 1938, and it follows one woman's life across the 20th century, but only in the space of 6 days. So we have 6 days and 6 decades. And this woman is also the daughter of a family of prominent artists who are inspired by a group of artists who were part of the Bloomsbury Group and lived at Charleston. But the book is very much a fictional novel which departs from those people and those stories as well.
I was going to ask, I understood you were loosely inspired by Vanessa Bell, who is Virginia Woolf's sister. Is that accurate?
Yes.
I feel like a lot of listeners know who Virginia Woolf is, but many might not know exactly Vanessa Bell. And I apologize to our listeners for making that assumption. I'm probably not right. So when we first meet Ivy, she's 19 years old. And when it ends, I believe she's in her 80s. How did you approach capturing the aging process in your writing?
Yes, I had a sense of kind of, arriving each day, obviously very much afresh because they're set in such different time periods. So with each kind of, new day, you have a new decade where obviously the world, huge events have taken place in the world. And also Ivy, has moved on in age. And so I, had this sense of needing to situate her very much in the time that she was living in and also the body that she was living in. I think that's the thing. A lot of the book, a lot of the sense of the book, what I was aiming for is this sense of embodiment, and how she is embodied. And I think that, when we first see Ivy, she's 19, and she's quite at home in her body in a sense, I think, but she's very much yearning, she's yearning for something. She's yearning for connection, for love, romance. And she is also very much kind of connecting with nature through her body as well. Lying on the grass or walking barefoot in the grass, feeling the trees around her. So she has almost this very open kind of sense to her. And then as the book moved on, I think I showed how her sense of her body changes somewhat. But I think she is someone who's always quite at home in her body in different ways. I mean, she enters a very different phase of life later on, where she's kind of enters a religious life, and then it describes how her life is so different, and that means that her body changes, but still she kind of enjoys those changes in a sense. So I quite enjoyed writing a character who is very at home in their body and kind of very sensuous about their body too.
I'd like to talk about your approach to dialogue. There's dialogue in this book, but the story is primarily moved along through your descriptive prose. It's very internal. When dialogue does appear, it's italicized, and it's a style I'm not exactly sure I've seen before. How and why did you select this approach?
Yes, it's an approach I had in my second book too, The Harpy. I suppose I'm somebody who approaches dialogue with a degree of caution or a degree of sort of like intense selectivity, I suppose, in just in terms of I'm fairly minimal with dialogue. I mean, it's interesting because now I write for screen, and that is obviously, almost entirely dialogue. And I think that I'm more at ease with dialogue than I was, let's say, in my first book. But I still have this sense that dialogue is something to be used quite sparingly in the text, I think. And the italicized nature of it in this book kind of gives it its own quality, gives it a sort of separation from the rest of the text. I think I do have quite an internal way of writing fiction, of being very much within somebody's mind, within somebody's body. I don't tend to write pages and pages of dialogue. I mean, who knows, that may change, but I have that sense of dialogue being, yes, being sprinkled through the text, being quite minimal and really leaning into more the sort of, perceptions, thoughts, and sensations of my characters.
Well, the first sentence of this novel is, "When Ivy looked back, this is what she remembered." So we are experiencing this book through her memory. Does that set us up for an unreliable narrator at all?
I think so to an extent, yes. I think there is a sort of like quite subtle thread through the novel of Ivy's perception being, very particular. And there's a sort of sense, I don't want to give it, give too much away, but towards the end of the novel that things may not have been exactly what they seemed, and that, some ways of sort of presenting things may have been very, very much kind of, slanted from her view. I think the sense of memory came from my original kind of immersion in these particular figures from the Bloomsbury Group and this sense of kind of biographical fiction, which was what I was originally going to write. So I wrote this book originally as biographical fiction, using real names, using real places. But then it was interesting because although it was very much rooted in real life, it was, real facts, real dates and events, it didn't really come to life. It didn't really have that lifelike quality that, you want fiction to have, or its own, life force. So I then moved into a much more, a much more free kind of fictional realm. But I kept that sense of, well, various things, but one thing was the spread of a whole life and the way that particular days are kind of, altered and shaped and formed really by memory. And there is a sense that Ivy is looking back on this day at the end of her life, on all of these days at the end of her life. But obviously not, not entirely literally, because we go into them in great detail. But, sort of as a fictional device, these are the key moments of her life. This is what she remembers.
I'd like to talk about Ivy's brother, Joseph. Can you talk about their relationship? Because they eventually have something very important in common.
Yes. So Ivy and Joseph have, I think, a real closeness and a real love between them. And this does translate in the end to them very much being in a relationship, a shared relationship with someone else, as it were, or having a relationship, both of them having a relationship with the same person. And I think that, that familial bond is one of the things that keeps bringing Ivy back to this person, this central kind of romance in the book. I don't want to give too much away, but the book is very much powered, I think, and kind of in the way the engine of the book is this central love story that runs through Ivy's, whole life. And this person is, on the first page, on the last page, and is really the center of Ivy's life. And that's very much linked to her brother and to, I mean, putting it in the most spoiler-free terms possible, but to a central family tragedy that they go through as a family, and that really shapes her life. And, I was interested in the way that these particular events, both sort of historical events. So we do have, we have the war, the Second World War, and we have, the 1960s and the various changes in society, but also family, key historical events within a family, as it were. So, deaths, premature deaths, can really tip things in a completely different direction, to how they would have been going otherwise. I think all of their lives are, utterly transformed by this one event.
You mentioned World War II, and Ivy's young adulthood takes place in front of this backdrop. It affects her marriage, her friendship with Francis, her family home. I don't really consider this a World War II novel, but much of one of the days takes place in this backdrop, doesn't it?
Yes, it's interesting because they're quite removed from the war, I think, as much as you can be. It's still fairly prevalent, but they're not living in London, they're not living in a city, they are in the countryside, and they're sort of carrying on their lives in this strange kind of feeling of unreality, I think, that this huge thing is happening and yet their lives go on, and yet they don't go on in the same way. And I think, I'm not comparing the same events directly, but I think that part of that sense might have come from the fact that I wrote some of this book during the pandemic, and that feeling of kind of like continuing your daily life, and yet there's this enormous thing happening in this huge sort of historical uncertainty. And, I live sort of fairly rurally as well, and that sense of kind of being surrounded by nature, and in a way nothing's changed, but that things are, hugely changed as well. I think I was very much, feeding that into those early parts of the novel.
One of the themes throughout the book is Ivy's complicated relationship with religion. And although we only know Ivy for 6 days of her life, we come to a pretty good understanding of how she questions and wavers in her beliefs, don't we?
Yes, she has a very kind of, yeah, she's, I would agree, complicated relationship with religion, also quite passionate, I think, and quite sort of driven by experiences that she's had, rather than a sort of, I mean, she does have theological questions, and she does have, sort of intellectual queries and responses, but a lot of it emotional for her, I think, and is driven by her emotional responses to things that happen in her life, and then is particularly for her a search for meaning. So I think, really at the center of the book is kind of this question of how should one live one's, I mean, it's a huge question, but how should, what's the central, meaning of life? How should one shape one's life? The question is formed by the fact that Ivy comes from this family of artists where for them the answer is art. There's just a very quite a simple answer in one sense. I mean, it's not simple to be an artist, but they are artists. The point of their life is art, and they've created this house where art and life are completely intertwined. As they were at Charleston, and that they're trying to live in this very particular way where life and art aren't sort of like in any way in conflict, but they're feeding one another. And Ivy comes from this family of artists, but she herself isn't an artist, or she feels herself not to be an artist. She describes herself, as not being, she feels she doesn't have any particular talent. I suppose she probably doesn't, but who knows why, where that sort of, assumption came from. But because she's come from this family where there's such a clear meaning of life, there's such a central sort of preoccupation, I think she needs to find her own meaning, and she finds that in religion initially, or at certain points in her life. She very much, that can be a very whole answer to questions of existence, and she finds that very much, and she finds a great deal of meaning and comfort in that. And that aspect of the book is quite autobiographical for me, because I had a very intense engagement with religion when I was younger too.
An idea that popped up a couple of times was exquisite risk. Can you talk to me about that?
Yes, I think so. That comes from a poem by John of St. John of the Cross, and Ivy. She's lived, I think at this point, she's lived in a, I suppose, a fairly risk-free way. And at the point where she encounters this poem, and she's very much chosen to kind of situate her life within these quite safe boundaries of marriage and children, and a sort of certain containing structure for her, which also enables her not to have to, as she puts it, she can kind of relax into kind of not having to make any decisions about, her future and what she's going to do and what she's going to be. So, that's the point at which she encounters this poem, and I think it's, it has a religious dimension, obviously, but I think for her it becomes a question of risking, a sort of a leap into her desires, into her, true kind of feelings, and into this sort of the beauty of, I suppose, the unexpected in life, really. And I think that's a key, theme in the novel, is that it's never too late, that life can change very radically at quite a late point in life, and that, I think Ivy has a few times of feeling that, it's too late, things are sort of, this is my life, and then something completely changes. And, a really key change in Ivy's life, I think, comes in her 50s, and she very much has this feeling of too late, but it turns out to be illusionary, and it's not too late for her.
I kept noticing references to light and marking them. And then after a while, I thought, oh, Beth, the title is Days of Light. But then even beyond that, I kept marking mentions of light, moving towards the light of adulthood or a distant light in a side chapel or the whole cell glowing an egg of light. And then I finally stopped because there were so many mentions of light. Can you talk to me about the theme?
Yes, I think for me, really the sort of both the setting and the theme and the sort of whole crux of the book is around Easter, the return of the light, spring, redemption. So one of the epigraphs to the novel is from the Bible, and it is, "And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." So a very, famous passage from the Gospel of John. And it's that sense of the mystery of light, really, that light is a mystery, that we don't really know, so much of life is a mystery, and that very central motif of light and darkness is a lot of the way that we kind of explore that sense of mystery. And that sense of mystery is really at the center of the book. There is so there's a tragedy, and there's an event, and this event and the tragedy all happens around this mysterious light. That's probably enough to say that. And this mysterious light is kept, it's kept really as a mystery in the book in most ways. And I wanted there to be this central mystery that's never really unraveled, that to give the sense that, we do live in mystery, and that Ivy particularly experiences life as mysterious, but not in a sort of, negative or scary way, really. I think ultimately she sort of revels in that in that mystery.
I like the idea of a character study across 6 days in someone's lifetime, and it sounds like an excellent creative writing exercise. Were there any time periods in Ivy's life that were especially difficult to capture?
Good question. I mean, I think there's a probably an in-between time, an in-between, where the thing is that, most decades of our lives probably have some sort of pivotal event, but there are probably also the odd decade which there's less of a pivotal event, or there is, more of just a kind of carrying on. I mean, I think the nature and structure of the book is that something fairly significant happens every decade, but there was probably one day which was slightly less momentous than the others, and then you're kind of, you're just, yeah, just careful to how that is structured and sort of how we keep the momentum of the novel really through that sort of thing. And I mean, there's still big decisions that are made on that day, and there are still, big understandings that she comes to, but I don't think there's not such an outwardly physically turning point in that dramatic sense. So I think that's the more challenging sense, is how to handle that balance, I suppose, between, the intimate and the epic and the everyday and the sort of swoop of history and of biography, because life is not always exciting and life isn't always, filled with dramatic events. But, novels need to have a certain pace and direction. So it's combining those two things together.
I know this story is narrated by Ivy. We get her perspective, but other than that, it's really a woman-led book, isn't it?
I think it is quite a female-led book. And I mean, obviously, we have our central character, Ivy, but we have, yeah, these particular mother-daughter interactions and sense of kind of ambivalence and sense of, this sort of almost like the agony and ecstasy of this, of the mother-daughter bond that they're, both incredibly close, in childhood. And then there's this kind of estrangement, and then there's, possibilities for reconciliation. And the book is, it's very much, yeah, it's a queer love story ultimately, and woman-led in that sense as well. Yeah, and there's a lot of kind of, different ways of living and different patterns of living that are explored in the book that people might find interesting, some of which are, historically sort of faithful to the Bloomsbury group, and some of them are, new to the novel.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from the book?
I think, I've had some responses because the book's, come out in the UK, and lots of obviously people I know have read it, and that's been really lovely. And I think that I'm moved when, people feel that they have a sense of hope, I suppose, at the end of the book, and a sense of love and a sense of having been with Ivy through all of that time, really being very close with her and of knowing her as a character. I think that something that I hope was given to the book, because it took, 4 years or so to write, and through a lot of different processes, and particularly the biographical immersion that I had prior to writing the fiction. So I was so immersed in these people's lives, every detail, every, diaries and letters and biographies and this historical texture. So what I hope is that, and someone said this to me recently, and I was really pleased that they felt that they got this, was that these people come fully formed, and that we know these people, they feel real. Because there is a huge, beyond the, relatively sort of, small margins of the book, there was an unbelievable amount of other text. So my own text that I've written, but also other people's text, and that this is in a way a distillation of so much other text that hopefully, we have an immediate sense of, who Ivy is, who Marina is, who Angus is. And that's not purely because they are, I would say actually that, some of the characters are really not their biographical counterparts, as it were, because I found it very important to be able to depart from that. So particularly Marina, who you is the mother figure, so you might say Vanessa, and her sister Genevieve, who you might say then, she's a writer, so Virginia Woolf. I think we can quite quickly see that Genevieve is not Virginia Woolf, and I think in a slightly more complex way, but I don't think, Marina is not Vanessa Bell. And I felt that that was part of my freedom with the writing of it, was to actually be able to depart particularly from those very iconic, very well-known historical figures, and to really create my own characters for the novel.
Well, the book is Days of Light. Megan Hunter, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Megan Hunter, author of the book Days of Light, which was published by Grove Press. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Goldlay.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.